Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for a Thursday on Patriots.com radio. John Rook, PFW's Eric Scalavino, and you. You know it's on Thursday, so you know you got to think about your picks. Who's going to win the game on Sunday between the New England Patriots and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Time to light them up, load them up, give us your thoughts because you got the yearbook slash media guide at stake. Through 2 weeks, nobody's even sniffed a correct answer. Can't believe that that's the case, but of course that is the case, and it will probably remain the case for a while. But the offer is still out there. If you correctly predict the score in Sunday's game, media guide is on your way. So there's several different ways to fire off your pick. If you want to give the reasons behind it, if you've got some extra predictions to go with it, by all means, fire it off. Webradio at patriots.com via email. The telephone number, toll-free, 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. You can also go the social media route at JR Broadcaster, the Twitter address, and you can hit me up on Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. So here we are, and we have, you know, both Paul and Fred saying victories, although Paul is obviously taking the points. Fred is going to lay the points. I was ensconced in what I was doing on the computer screen, so I didn't hear your prediction. So I'm not going to make you give your prediction until a little bit later for those that actually just might be tuning in.
You were going to keep folks in suspense, including yourself.
I was going to kind of do that.
Yeah.
And I usually wait until toward the end of the hour to give mine because I like to hear the opinions of the fans because I really want to know
where
swayed. I try not to let that sway me. I really do. I have a pretty good idea where I'm going, but I like to see where public sentiment is.
Mm-hmm.
I just like to see where public sentiment is before I lock myself in. That doesn't mean that I'm going to fudge one way or the other. I personally think that the Patriots will be fortunate to win on Sunday. And that's the way I've been kind of leaning. So, in other words, as far as 7.5 is concerned, if that's the spread, I'm definitely taking points. I'm not giving. I'm not giving.
I think it's going to be very close too. Again. But I'll leave you in suspense who wins and what the score is.
Think about this, though, for a second. Think about this for a second. Half the games in the NFL are decided a touchdown or less right now. So, you know, games are
really
close.
That many?
I believe that's what it is the first couple of weeks. So it stands to reason that, you know, the odds are going to be in the favor of it being a close game from a statistical point of view. And yes, I know that the Patriots seem like they could be on the verge of breaking out. And yes, you know, Patriots fans hope at some point that the rookie receiver is going to get it. You know, that it's finally the light bulb is going to go on, and all of a sudden, you know, they're going for, you know, 8 catch, 95-yard games with 2 touchdowns.
I want to just pick up on that for a second, John. And we talked a little bit about it yesterday, but how unrealistic is it for any team's fans, this one included, to expect not just one, but 3 rookie receivers to get it, to contribute, and to make significant contributions right away? How often does that happen on any team with 1 rookie wide receiver?
It never happens. It never happens. And I heard this conversation in a couple of different places already. Fact of the matter is, rookie receivers are rare to have breakout years in their first year. Maybe with the exception, I can think of 2 in recent memory. I think Anquan Boldin had a pretty good start to his career. And obviously, look at where he
Larry
is now in his career.
Larry
Fitzgerald had a pretty good start
AJ
to his
Green.
Career. AJ Green, yeah, okay, I'll buy that. But most guys,
most guys don't get
no.
That kind of production.
They don't.
Away.
And so I saw a couple of predictions where, you know, Kimbrell Tompkins would be a 55 or a 58 receiver, you know,
I'll take
game.
It.
If you could get that,
yeah.
Man, go to the bank
I'll
with it.
I'll take it.
But, you know, realistically, that isn't going to happen. Same thing with Dobson.
You know what hurt us? Their preseason.
Yes.
They looked very good in preseason.
We were fooled by the preseason, but we're also, you have to keep in mind, and we've stressed this, you know, periodically for the first few weeks here, that teams are running vanilla defenses against the Patriots. Teams are very basic. They don't show anything. They don't give anything. They're not going to play their hand. They're not going to show you anything that they're going to do during the regular season. The preseason is just that. Pre-season. This is all about, in the preseason, evaluation of the players that you have. You're just going to put them out there and tell them to go man-on-man against the guy that's in front of you. And if you can take him, that's to your benefit. If you get whipped, guess what? The unemployment line is probably not far away. That's really what the preseason is. So to get anything out of the preseason is ridiculous. Mm. I've said that time and time again. I said it in the opening week of the regular season now.
I understand.
But it's completely and totally ridiculous to think that, you know, just because we saw Kimbrell Tompkins do well in the preseason and because we saw some flashes of brilliance from Aaron Dobson that these guys are going to go off in the regular season. Regular season, by far and away, is a different animal. Way different animal. And so it's going to take some time for these guys to play catch up and get up to speed with the regular season. The different defenses that they're going to see, the different packages that are going to be thrown at them. Delving into their own playbook rather than just the basic, you know, flag route or post route or you know, whatever you got. It's going to be different. You know, preseason's almost like, okay, let's draw it up on the huddle, guys. You go to the bottle cap, you go to the stick. I mean, that's almost like what it is. Yeah. They don't delve into the playbook.
Base defense.
Base.
No, very little blitzing.
Exactly.
Or rushing, anything like that.
Precisely. So, you know, I hope we now can begin, as we're in the third week here, I'm hoping now that we can begin to get by the quote-unquote expectation downfall that we've all had when it comes to the New England Patriots. Expectations were here, and I'm holding my hand high for those that are visually challenged here.
Which
would be everybody but you and I and Kevin. And Kevin's not
Kevin's
in there
not
anywhere.
In
right
here,
he's
right
not
now.
Even there right now anyway, so he's now visually challenged. So expectations are here, up here, and reality is down
somewhere
here.
Somewhere down here.
Yeah, somewhere down here. And that's basically what we're talking about. Okay.
That's good vocal range right here.
Thank you very much. Well, you know, I try. This is radio. I am a play-by-play guy, so, you know, I try to describe as best as I can what I see here. So you need to try to find somewhere in the middle. Not expecting... The expectations go from here all the way to up here, somewhere in the middle. That's where you need to be, and that's realistic to expect. The problem is, of course, time frame and getting there, and the time frame has been askewed. That's not a word of the day.
No,
but I've chosen
You've
to use that
up.
Word. I kind of made it up because it's just, it kind of fits with what I'm thinking here. It's the word skewed with a twist. Yeah. Right?
Askew and skewed.
Yes. Askewed. Yeah. Yes, correct. It's a combination of the two.
I knew where you were going with
okay.
that.
Okay. See, you know, you linguists.
I've been doing this show too long. That's why.
I know. That's another matter entirely, I guess. The problem is that our expectations and everything are askewed. And so, reality and perception are two completely things. And this is one of the few times that perception is not reality. A lot of times perception is reality, at least in the real world, and kind of plays out that way. It's not here in football. So because you have expectations up here and reality down here, it's reasonable to expect it can land somewhere in the middle. But everything has been skewed or askewed because of the injury situation. Right? I mean, Amendola's out. Mm. Gronkowski, we're still not sure about. Mm-hmm. We don't have Shane Vereen. Won't have him until the midway point in the regular season, we hope. And those are three huge pieces to the offensive puzzle to a team that was already missing a couple of its, you know, big corner pieces before the season ever started. Of course, the tight ends. And so now that you've had, you know, some of the other pieces that are taken apart, really, the puzzle analogy here is perfect. You really don't know what you're going to have until the corners are in place. And the corners, or in this case, the cornerstones of this offense, were ripped out from the get-go. Mm. One major one, and Hernandez is not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So how well do you make up for that? Can you make up for that? Can you create the full picture missing a corner? Well, of course you can, but it's going to take you a little bit different track to get there. You following my analogy now?
Yes.
Okay. And frankly, I was thinking about it today. I said, this is so insanely easy to think of. And nobody's used this yet. Nobody's thought of this yet, but it really is like putting a puzzle together. And so the Patriots, when they lost Hernandez, it's kind of like, oh crap, now we got to sift through all these pieces and figure out what's going to fit here, because that's going to be vacant and we can't fill it. And so until we get to that point, what's going to happen? We're going to struggle. We're going to try to figure out how best we get there. How do we fill that spot? Well, we can't fill that spot without. We're going to have to try to jam something else in there. You know, it's the proverbial, you know, square peg in a round hole thing. It's just, that's what's going to happen. You're making moves toward the direction, but when the injuries come into play, again, now you're looking at a couple of corners that are off. You've lost a big middle piece, you know, and the one, you know, corner that you do have in Tom Brady, well, it's hard to branch out from the corner where he's situated because you're missing some of the stuff in the middle. And so you don't really know where to go. And that really is the best analogy I can give you. That's what's happening to the Patriots on offense. When the injured players return, things should conceivably get better. I think we all realize that. We're all hoping for that. But when is that going to be, and how much are they going to suffer between now and then, and do other injuries occur? These are all the X factors involved. And in this sport, we all know that that can happen. So I guess, you know, what I would kind of ask you, Eric, at least at this stage of the game, where does this team need to put its emphasis? Does this team need to put its emphasis on development, or does this team need to put its emphasis on winning now at all costs and getting these costs and getting these guys back as soon as possible?
Well, great question. I think if they wanted to win at all costs now, I think they would have made more moves in the offseason to make that happen. And you're talking offensively, right?
Sure,
Or just in general?
In general, yes, but offensively is the clear, you know,
right,
focus here. Yeah.
Since you've decided to go youth with all of these receivers and other pieces, you got to dance with the one that brought you, I'd say. Let these guys sink or swim with them. Bringing in an old, washed-up veteran or veterans now and hoping that they'll be able to do something better than what the rookies are doing,
mm-hmm,
I think is just admitting failure way too early and abandoning your plan and panicking. I don't like it. I'm hearing these rumors about, you know, or at least speculation about players who are out there that Patriots should try to go after. And I know I said at the beginning that it's unrealistic to expect three rookies to have those kind of contributions, but that's the investment this team made. That's what they decided they wanted to do. Stick with your guns. If that's what you think is the best thing for the football team, as we've heard so often, then stick with it.
Yep.
Because changing course midstream rarely does a team any good.
Well, and I think that's where a lot of our sentiment has actually gone, at least initially, is changing course. I mean, we need to do something to shake this up. We need to do something to, you know, help out the rookie receivers.
Patience.
And I think that's kind of what we've been trying to preach here in a roundabout way without actually using the P word right off the bat. Patience is what it's going to require here. And I know that we have a lot of fans, and we heard from several of them yesterday and certainly a bunch of them on Tuesday during Nitpick Tuesday. But, you know, people want to win, and they want to get this team back to the way it was, and you know, they want it to be a contending team, and want it to be one of the elite in the NFL, and yeah, I get you. Don't think for a minute that the guys down the hallway don't feel the same way.
Of course. They're just as competitive.
But it's a younger team, so it's a team that has to learn how to do what it is that you want them to do. It's up to the coaching staff, some of whom are still relatively young, and I know Matt Patricia's name came up in conversation over the last couple of days, and maybe even some criticism being fired his way, and he's the least of the worries right now, people. The defense is performing. The defense is doing really what you want them to do. They've kept the team in games. They've won, helped win two games already. They are the difference right now between the Patriots being 2-0 and possibly 0-2. That's not a stretch. So put Matt Patricia and the defense aside right now. That's not the problem. The problem is having enough bullets in the pistol. That's, you know, and I, all things considered, I hate using that analogy, but that really is appropriate in a sports sense. It just they're blanks right now is all they have. They need something that is a real weapon, and they just don't have them because they're incarcerated or they're hurt. Now, that brings me to today's report. Rob Gronkowski was back out on the field again today, was he not?
Still, yep.
Yeah.
Didn't talk to us today in the locker room and did that yesterday, but he's practicing, John. Something still tells me, though, that he's not going to play this week. That's just my inkling. I think it would be my preference anyway. I think they should exercise all caution with him and wait until the last possible minute to put him back out
when
there.
When is the last possible minute in your estimation?
I don't know. I mean, I wanted them to put him on PUP and give him at least the 6 weeks. So in my mind,
if they think he's ready to come back before 6 weeks, that's why they did what they did.
Obviously.
So this is week three.
Obviously.
We're halfway through that. Next week is week four. So
I think next week is the might be the – if going with that scenario, if they think he could be ready within
six weeks,
try to get through this game without him. As tough as it might be the way they've played, just try to get through one more game. If you can go 3-0 without him, next week I think is when you're going to really, really need Gronk and the offense to start doing something because that could get ugly. Even with all the injuries Atlanta's suffering on defense right now, that could get ugly quickly for New England. They'll need him more than ever next week if he's ready to go. So I think if you can get by one more week without him, the schedule makers set this up just well enough. You know, Tampa's playing better than their record would suggest, but still, this is a game they should win at home. Try to get one more week without Gronk and then bring him back next week.
Well, if it were up to me, and it's not, but if it were up to me, I would have to concur. I would have to agree. I'd say you'd have to hold him out one more. Try to get through this game at home.
Hold your nose because
it'll probably
it could be an ugly one
again.
It'll
be a stinker on the way. But try to get through it if you can. Maybe, and I don't know how the roster's going to fold out, maybe you activate him, but maybe you don't put him in there. I mean, is it the kind of situation
Why bother activating him?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. What if you decided, okay, at halftime we're down to these guys, we activated him, let's put him in there in the second half? Something like that. I mean, could you see a scenario like that? Maybe we activate him to have him in an emergency situation if we need him. What if we fall behind a couple of scores and we really need to go to him?
That's panic mode. I don't think you panic and you're not exercising the patience that you need. I don't like the idea.
Okay.
I would rather just
I'm just throwing out a what
if. Either he's available or he's not.
Yeah, I'm just throwing out a what if.
If he is available, play him. I better see him out there on the first snap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as nervous as I'm going to be until I see him.
What is
getting hit and getting up.
Right. Well, obviously everybody wants to see that and everybody probably hold their breath collectively when they see him take the first hit like that. Status then on some of the other guys. Amendola was out there. Nobody really expects him to play.
I really would be stunned. Just seeing the way he's unable to move properly, I'd really be stunned if he's out there on Sunday.
Does he shoot it up and go back out there again? Because that's what happened a couple of weeks ago.
Possible, yeah, but
I mean, you know, I guess it's a determination between him and the doctors. Can he do any more damage? It may just be incredibly painful, you know, and they can numb him up and send him out there. If he can't do any more damage, then okay, I can understand that. But if he could tear it further and really put himself on the shelf for a while, why would you even consider such a thing?
Yeah, it's his whole situation frightens me. since he's not on PUP, every week I'm, you know. I think, and obviously he couldn't have, you know, he didn't get the injury. He had the injury in the preseason. We know that. So I think putting him on PUP really would have been a drastic move, and it would have really started the panic calls with him as far as, you know, why did we get rid of Welker? You bring this guy in, he's always injury prone. But he clearly exacerbated the injury at Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw you've seen the replay when he runs that pattern into the end zone and then immediately grabs for his leg and starts limping back. I mean, you know, putting him on PUP would not have been, to me, an option, because if he was, he didn't seem that bad going into the Buffalo game. We didn't know he was going to get that bad during the Buffalo game. But now it might just be a matter of practicing him this week to see how much pain can you withstand, son. Do we need to actually take the measure of, you know, putting you under the knife? That could be what they're trying to do here, and not necessarily game planning him for Sunday. They could be trying to see if they need to take the next drastic step of surgery.
Well, doesn't it stand to reason, though, that if surgery really were a distinct possibility, they wouldn't have already gone that direction? I mean, because every day you waste is a day less that you can have him later in the year when it really counts.
Yeah, it's a really risky gamble that they're going with here, because and again, I'm not a medical professional, so I don't know if he's doing himself any more harm or not. But just the eyeball test tells me there's something really wrong with him, and I can't imagine that going out there every day and running around on it is going to help it.
Leads me to believe my initial scenario that, you know, he can't do any more damage. He's just trying to see how much he can tolerate.
Maybe.
And then maybe, you know,
maybe.
And Sunday he's out there.
If that's the case, then this thing's not going to be healed until the off season.
Until the off season, right. He might have to go in and have surgery in the off season to repair it.
Immediately.
Exactly. Yeah, let's not do a Gronk and wait. I mean, I realize he was hindered by, you know, some other matters, but the fact of the matter is you have it done immediately. But why else would he be out there if there wasn't a chance that he could play? Because it just does make no sense if he can only injure himself further.
Yeah. And, you know, that might have been the case going into Buffalo, that he could hurt himself further, but they took the gamble of...
And so now it's torn.
Now what? Yeah.
Well, they clearly did something at halftime, wink, wink, and I think we all know that's what some guys do.
Yeah, because
But you only do that, generally speaking, if you can't hurt yourself further. That if there's a great amount of pain and discomfort, you numb it, you get through it, and then you start to rehab and do what you can. Hmm. That's what happens. If you can hurt yourself further, well, then you're doing your career a disservice. Yeah. Not only your teammates, you're doing your career a disservice.
Yeah.
And so that's just stupid.
Your career, your body.
Yeah, it's just stupid. Yeah. That doesn't make any sense. So if he's out there, that means to me there's a chance here. There's got to be a chance here. Otherwise, you're playing with fire, Scarecrow, and that's just
right.
Dumb.
Yeah.
That's just dumb.
My heart's going to be in my throat the whole time, though, if I see him out there on Sunday.
Well, of course. I think that's the way it's going to be with most everybody if they see him out there. I think the fact remains, though, is that, you know, you look at it from the flip side, Tampa Bay now has to prepare for Danny Amendola. They also have to prepare, conceivably, for Rob Gronkowski.
Sure, yeah.
All right, elsewhere then, in terms of potential guys that we could see back on the field, how about the rookie Zach Sudfeld? He's been out of practice, right?
He's been at practice, and he was on the injury report as having fully participated yesterday with his hamstring, which is good news, because if Gronk can't go or isn't allowed to go, they are going to need Sudfeld.
He's going to have to be out there.
Yeah. So that's an improvement from last week when Sudfeld was limited with the hamstring.
Marquise Cole was non-injury related.
Right, he was back out there today.
That's actually good news.
Yes.
In that regard.
Matthew Slater, the only guy, and it's official now. It's a wrist.
Okay.
Not a part of the hand. So
we have two broken wrists, basically, is what we have.
Vereen and Slater.
Vereen and Slater. Mm-hmm. Right. That'll keep them out for another 6 weeks or so.
Probably.
Yeah, thereabouts. Okay. So Slater really the only one that we know that is definitely not going to play.
Other than Vereen, yeah.
Other than Vereen.
But on the active roster, because Vereen's not on the active roster now on the IR, DFR.
Okay.
Slater's the only active guy who's not practicing.
Okay. Do you get the general sense then, before we get a couple of calls in here, do you get the general sense that, you know, these guys know what they have to do? I mean, what have they told you? What have they said in the locker room in terms of, you know, correctable problems that they're facing on offense?
Yeah, and they all think that the problems are correctable, at least that's what they're telling us anyway, and that it's a combination of mental and physical, and, you know, this is a good team, Tampa, and this is a tough league to win games in. You shouldn't be expected to blow teams out all the time, and they're saying all the right things, but, you know, nothing that we haven't heard before.
Okay.
I know. It's only week three, but we're already in the cliche
stage of the game. All right. Once again, 855-PATS-500, the toll-free telephone number. We need your scores. We need your predictions. Accurate predictions to the point, to the winner. Receive a free copy of the Patriots 2013 yearbook / media guide. No winners through the first 2 weeks, but if you want your chance to win the book, you have to bring in the score. So you can call us. You can email us, webradio@patriots.com. You can go the Twitter route, @JRBroadcaster. Or you can go Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is how you spell the last name. Sean in Vancouver, Canada, leads it off in the playbook. Hey, Sean.
Hey, John. Hey, Eric. I hope you guys are doing well.
Hey, thanks, Sean. Man.
Great. Now, I predict a close game as well. I think I'm going to give a score of 20-17, Patriots win. I would be surprised if Gronk or Amendola plays in this game. If they do, I think the Patriots would cover. But otherwise, I'm saying it's going to be close. And what I'm looking for is Dobson to play a lot better. I think he's probably worked a lot with Brady this week, and he's going to have those errors fixed where he's going to catch the ball and turn the right way. And sure, he might make a couple of mistakes, but he won't look completely lost. I think he'll have a decent game. I expect Tlaib to give up a couple of big plays to Jackson, but I also expect him to get an interception as well. And, you know, in terms of your theory of Amendola, with his groin not being able to get worse, would that be great if that's the case? And I would be absolutely amazed if he plays through pain the whole season and doesn't get injured again. That would be something that would completely amaze me.
Well, like we said, you know, the fact of the matter is I can't imagine they would have him out there doing anything if they thought he could hurt himself further. Doesn't that make sense?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Why would you want to risk that?
Exactly the point. I mean, we're all dying to get the guy back in there. So why is he out practicing? Well, maybe he's not as hurt as everybody thinks he is. I mean, all you have to do is try to put two and two together here. It's not rocket science. But, you know, if he's out there, then that tells me there's a chance. There's a chance.
And a thing, you know, that makes that even more probable is if you look at the game, the first game, he got hurt, and you could see how much pain he was in, and then he came back. So he was playing through the pain in that game. So maybe that is the thing. Like, they looked at it, they examined it. You know what? Well, you're just going to have to pay through the pain play through that pain or have an operation. So that was probably what it came down to.
Sure. Yeah, I can understand that. Absolutely. All right, so what do you think, Sean, about Sunday?
I'm still, you know, saying Patriots 20 and the Bucks 17. It'll be close, fairly low scoring, and that's the way I'm going to go with it.
20-17. You're in the ballpark, at least by my estimation. But, you know, if it turns out to be 20-17, I think we'd all take that right now. If you give me that score, we'll go to the bank with it. Let's move on. Go to Atlanta.
Yeah. Great. Thanks.
Right? All right.
Enjoy the game.
Thanks,
all right,
Sean.
Appreciate that, Sean. Thanks. Our friend Kevin in Munich is with us. Kevin, you're in the playbook.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good, Kevin. How goes things in...
Guten Tag.
Yes. How are things in the Rhine?
Yeah, well, things going pretty well.
Good. What do you think about Sunday?
My prediction for Sunday is going to be 21-17.
21-17, okay. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Again, but I think the offense is going to work on Sunday better than they did on Thursday, simply because I don't hope there will be that much rain coming down. And I also hope that Amendola doesn't play and also Gronk doesn't play, because we need them later in the season, and I think this is a winnable game also without them.
Yeah, I would have to concur. I mean, there's no question about it in my mind. It's a winnable game without him. I think it'll be more difficult without him. I think their chances would increase exponentially with him. Simply from the fact that, you know, not that he's going to go out and he's going to catch 8 or 9 or 10 balls, but fact is that he's going to take attention away from the younger guys, and that would mean that the younger guys conceivably would have an opportunity in less traffic to be able to make a play. That makes sense?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. So, you know, if they have him, great. If not, well, yeah. I think that I'm not personally planning on him being there. That my own thought is that I don't think he will be in there on Sunday. I kind of agree with Eric in that regard. I still think this game is winnable without him, but I think they'll need to play flawlessly, which means not turning the ball over. I think that certainly, you know, the two rookie receivers in question, Tompkins and Dobson, are going to have to catch more than they drop. And I think there's going to have to be some semblance of a running game. And considering Tampa's defense is, you know, was strong a year ago, and, you know, they're strong again this year, and they really only kind of shot themselves in the foot, you know, in their two losses this year, I think that's going to be easier said than done. I think it'll be very difficult to run on Tampa Bay, and it may be even harder to actually throw when we consider what they have at corner and at safety.
Yeah. How do you think Josh Boyce will be in the game plan this week?
You know, that's a great question. E, what do you think about Josh Boyce?
I mean, maybe you gave him some opportunities because – he needs them, A, and B, why not? The other two haven't done, you know,
much,
all that much to keep their hold on the starting jobs. So.
If he's not getting time out there, it could, to me, it could be one of two things. Number one, he just doesn't get it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Or number two, they want Brady to work on his chemistry or his timing with the other two guys first. In other words, feeling like they're taking time away from the other guys, we need to make sure that the other two guys get set first before we move on to helping somebody else.
Or a combination of both.
Yeah.
Which would be the worst-case scenario because you want Boyce to at least be getting it.
Well, you want to, yeah.
Or, I mean, mentally be getting it.
You did draft him for a reason, to try to play and be a contributor at some point, right?
Yeah.
Can he return kicks?
Yeah, he's part of the rotation at kick return. When they do the warm-ups pregame.
And he should be in there. I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't have him and Leon Washington in there. I don't understand.
Well, I think Washington, once Washington's thigh is completely healthy, he's been on the injury report since they re-signed him before the Buffalo game with a thigh injury. And I think he's been limited every day in practice. He was inactive for the Buffalo game. He was in the Jets game but didn't return kicks. I think once he's fully recovered from that thigh injury, I think you'll see him.
Is he close based on what you've seen in practice? And I know you don't get to see a lot.
You don't get to see a lot, no. Yeah. So it's really difficult to say. But
he's not like wearing a red jersey or anything.
No. But his listing on the injury report yesterday was limited. Mm-hmm. So unless he's full today, that would show progress. If he's still limited, doesn't give me much hope that he'll return kicks. But once he does get back, my guess is he'll be the return guy.
All right, Kevin, what else do you think?
That was pretty much everything.
Okay. Good. Well, enjoy the game this weekend. I know we'll talk again soon.
All right.
Thanks, Kevin.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Have a nice weekend, guys.
You too.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Love that.
I do too.
That's really good. All right. So there you go. That's your chance. 855-PATS-500 is the toll-free telephone line or the ACE ticket hotline, 508-298-0398. Predictions 20-17, 21-17.
That's a good neighborhood, I think.
Pretty good neighborhood.
I think people are on target.
Michael says, did anyone win a yearbook yet? No.
No.
Okay, here goes with a prediction. I figure the defense can hold them to 13. And after some thought, I think our offense will get a few field goals. Defense will get one touchdown. There will be one offensive touchdown. A final score of 23-13. So he's got the Patriots covering.
Mm. Covering, but not playing all that
particularly well.
Again,
in other words, a low-scoring game. Look, if you're telling me the Patriots are going to hold the Bucs to 13, then I do like their chances to win. I like their chances to win. If you can hold Tampa Bay to 13, I think the Patriots can score conceivably 16-17. I think it's possible. If you're telling me that Tampa's going to score 17-20, I'd say it's going to be pretty close. Because I think that's about where it's going to be, you know. And again, in a couple of minutes, I'll throw my prediction out there. But I just, you know, I'm you know, like you and I have gone back and forth over the years now of doing this show. And you know, when it comes to, you know, predicting the score, you generally get a feel just from listening, just from reading, just from talking, observing, if you will. And either have a really, you know, a decent feel for a game, or you don't have a feel at all. And in this one, I don't really have a tremendous feel at all. If anything, it's a little negative, and it's probably because of the overall malaise that we're sort of thrust into because of the, you know, the problems that the team is having offensively right now. I feel pretty good about the Patriots' defense and the way that they've come along. I do. Are they world beaters? No. Have they improved? Yes. Does it look like they're going to continue to improve? Well, sure. I love the way that Kyle Arrington has started the season. I think that the secondary has at least been adequate, you know, save for a few, you know, busted plays. But honestly, right now, nothing's hurt them to the point where it's cost them anything because they're 2-0.
Part of that, too, is bad drops by the other team.
Yes, okay.
Because guys have been open more than I'd like.
But the Patriots have also dropped their share, too.
Yeah,
bailed out the other team's defense.
Yeah.
The one thing that concerns me a little bit, and I'd love for you to speak to this a little bit further, is linebackers in coverage. Because I know that there has been some criticism over especially Jerod Mayo getting whipped a couple of times. And even though they might not technically ask him to do that as much, just by the very nature of his position, he's going to be required to do some. And he is much better at, you know, filling the gap and run stuffing, and that's why you see him get 11, 12, 13, 15 tackles a game, because the guys up front are doing their jobs. But invariably, he's going to be caught somewhere over the middle in a coverage situation. Is he a step slow?
I think so.
What does this mean then overall?
We'll find out when they play against a good team, won't we?
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. It's very true. We're going to find. I mean, that's when these receivers don't drop the passes.
You know,
what's going to happen
when the score gets a little bit higher than the teens?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen?
Is anything that he's done correctable, or is this really a problem that could be a bigger problem later in the year?
I haven't watched enough film to know. I mean, I do watch the film every week after every game, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a little bit at a loss for words. I'm, you know, sensing that there might be more of an opportunity for some of the other younger guys. You know, maybe, you know, Hightower slides over. I think we're all waiting to see if Jamie Collins can be given an opportunity, even though he's technically not in that position. But, you know, what happens when he does get in there, if he does get in there, other than, say, in a special team situation or even in a passing down situation, which I'm not sure we'll even see, to be quite honest with you.
I certainly think he's faster than Mayo.
Oh, yeah.
And would probably be a better option in coverage because of his experience in the secondary and, you know, moving
he
up.
He started
to the,
out as a safety in college,
right.
Yes.
So I would, on paper, in theory, he should be better at that. You know, Mayo's always been a linebacker, a bigger body, a slower a foot. The problem is, do you take Mayo off the field is that worse for your defense?
That's kind of what I'm asking here. I mean, are we getting to the point now to where we're going to see any real improvement here, replacing a guy like Mayo in the middle for someone that can actually cover?
And we won't know unless they actually make that move,
right?
Unless they bench, and I find it hard that they're going to bench a captain.
Yeah.
So it's going to have to be because one of the other two, you know, Spikes or Hightower can't go. And they play a lot of nickel, so that's one less linebacker you have out there.
Mm-hmm.
As it is, so the reps are going to be tough for Collins to get unless either Mayo goes down or I just don't see them benching him, John. But I know maybe they do a rotational thing where, you know, we've seen that before where they've been doing it now, actually, on defense with the nickel, with which linebacker, Spikes or Hightower, is in the game at any given point. Maybe they do something. Maybe they start doing that with Mayo and Collins. Maybe they do a little bit of a rotational thing. Haven't seen it yet. I mean, Collins has gotten a few reps, but not enough to have any significant amount of film or to be able to make any sort of assessment on his abilities. It's just not enough there yet.
Matt on Facebook says, I think Tampa is struggling, continues to do so on offense, though the Patriots continue to struggle, but the defense is the story. Gets two TDs, 24-10 Patriots. I know you can call me crazy, but the friction down in Tampa is going to kill that team. And that is an issue that we'll bring up with Rick Stroud of the Tampa Times coming up in the next hour of the program. But there does seem to be some, as Matt put it, friction going on. The quarterback and the coach don't seem to like each other too much.
Yeah. That's not a good thing.
No. Especially when the quarterback knows that he needs the coach for playing time. Coach needs that he needs the quarterback, you know, to possibly have his best chance to win.
Right. Because I think if there's that much of a rift between the starting quarterback and the coach, then that tells me that there are probably factions in the locker room who are either with the quarterback or with the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Unless all of them are with one or the other, and then that's not good for anybody either.
What does the fact that Greg Schiano is the head coach at Tampa, what does that say about the Rutgers players that the Patriots have selected? And what does it say about the kind of players maybe that Schiano is trying to coach and his style down in Tampa as well? Should these teams be mirrors of each other in any way?
I think potentially. There could be favorable matchups because of the similarity scheme, style, the coaching that they've gotten. But I don't know. I mean, realistically, New England has, you know, McCourty, maybe Daron Harmon a little bit, as regular Rutgers guys who are going to be on the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to see Steve Beauharnais out there barring something catastrophic.
And he was inactive last week anyway.
Right.
They haven't had to go to Logan Ryan yet.
A whole lot.
Which is probably a bonus, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd rather keep the starting secondary the way it has been.
Mm-hmm.
Continuity among those guys is important, and that they haven't needed him is a good thing, yeah.
Okay. Mary Beth chimes in with Pats 23, Bucks 21.
Same score as the Buffalo game.
Yeah, 23-21. Again, if you want to mail it in, then that's probably a good one to go with. Then also on Facebook, Paul says Patriots 21, Bucks 23. Says offensive woes continue, giving a series of short fields. The D limits them to a few field goals, but not enough to overcome the struggles, and even some dumb penalties can't save us. And that's the first time, I think, honestly, in maybe 2 years that we've actually had somebody pick the other team to win?
Wow. Who was it?
Paul.
From? Does it say
where?
Doesn't
say where from one. You know, just, hold on, let me see if he does his, I don't want to.
Wow.
No, doesn't say where he's from. Okay. How about that? And then Nori on Facebook says, prediction 16-13, Pats. Gostkowski kicks the game-winning field goal. Another game where it's going to be a dogfight. Freeman will throw at least 3 picks to keep the Pats in the game. The Pats offense will still struggle against a decent Bucks defense. I actually kind of like that one. I think that could easily happen. I don't know if they're gonna pick Josh Freeman. 16-13. I don't know if Josh Freeman's going to throw 3 picks. If he does, that certainly would give Greg Schiano his impetus to make a change at quarterback.
I think we'll see Mike Lennon at some point in this game.
In the game? Yeah. I kind of do too. If Tampa continues to struggle, let's say in the first half, maybe even the first quarter and a half, I certainly could see at halftime them making a change to try to change the tempo, pick up the pace, go with a different look, maybe throw some different things at the New England defense and trying to change it up. If the Patriots are leading anywhere from like 10-0 or somewhere in that vicinity beyond, or 10-3, you know, if Tampa has not gotten into the end zone, I could see that happen.
Mm-hmm.
I would concur with that one. Let's see, what else do we have here? Let's go to Twitter. David, just checking in with you guys. I would like to predict that the Patriots win 21-10. I'm going to be positive. What do I have to lose? You have nothing to lose, David. It's the Patriots that have everything to lose in this one. Mm. But he says 21-10. MC Johnny Way says
he has a media guy to lose.
He does. Well, that's true. Well, it's got to own it first. Yeah. Then you could lose it, I guess, right? But, 21-10 is what he says. If it's 21-10, Dave, it's yours. MC Johnny says prediction, 27-17, Patriots win. And then David says from Maryland, I think the Pats will win. Score will be 14-10. 13-10 last week against the Jets.
Okay.
David in Maryland says 14-10 Patriots.
Okay.
We're getting there, huh?
We're getting there.
Getting there. Again, at JR Broadcasters, how you get us on Twitter. If you want to fire off your prediction, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, the last name on Facebook. And if you were not a friend on Facebook, just submit the friend request and we'll get you right in. And then, of course, email webradio at patriots.com. We'll get to those coming up in a little bit. And the toll-free line, 855-PATS-500, or the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Big Pompa says, Pats win 34-20. I just feel Brady is going to go off, play lights out. Dobson's going to get a 50-plus yard touchdown.
Okay.
And then Michael says on Twitter, my guess is Pats 24, Bucks 17.
That's very close to what my score prediction is going to be. Very, very close.
Close.
Mm.
Okay. 24-17.
That's very close to what I'm going to give you in a second.
Well, seeing as we're, you know, narrowing down our time here in the opening hour of the program, what are you thinking then for Sunday? And what's it going to break down to? What's it going to come down to?
I think it's going to be three quarters of nail-biting, close, low-scoring.
Angst. Rubbing your hands, sitting on the edge of your seat.
Gnashing of teeth. Yeah. Rubbing of hands.
Yeah, sweaty palms.
Yeah, all of that.
Yeah.
It's going to be 17-16 late in the fourth quarter when New England gets a backdoor cover touchdown and wins 24-16.
Okay. Well, my prediction is very similar. I have to admit, yesterday I was leaning toward taking Tampa in this game, but I'm going to stay true to form. And I did say at the beginning of the year that
with
the
our
first
roster,
three games were, I'm going to hang with
breakdown.
That until I see something else on the field that's going to cause me to think differently.
Yeah.
And through the first 2 weeks, I think we'd all have to agree, we haven't.
Mm.
You know, positively or negatively,
right.
We really haven't.
No, nothing's changed.
So I'm not going to change from saying this is a win.
Right.
But I'm going to say it's going to be by the skin of your teeth, and I do think it'll be a last second or last drive field goal, similar to what we saw in Buffalo, but it won't be quite as high scoring. 16-14 Patriots.
So no cover.
No cover.
Yeah, okay.
I am going to take the Patriots 16-14, but it's
it's
going to come down to, it could very well come down to a backdoor cover for Tampa, you know, trailing 16-7, and they score late and the onside kick it.
Oh, boy.
It's entirely possible. It's entirely possible.
Yeah, I'm not going to be stunned if they lose this game.
I won't be either. I'll be very disappointed, like everybody else would be.
Right, because my schedule prediction will be off. But.
Right. Well, of course, we all know that's what's most important. But no, I won't be disappointed, which means then, automatically, okay, you win one or you lose one that you thought you're going to win. And invariably, it does usually happen somewhere. I just didn't think it would be this one.
Mm.
So if it happens this week, you got to pick another one up that you didn't think you're going to get.
Right.
That also does usually happen, but you'd like to think that you'd have a little bit healthier roster, maybe a little bit more experienced roster in an effort to get that, and right now they don't have either one of those. That's the big challenge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do we win? Are we eligible for the yearbook if we win?
I already have one, so.
Oh, okay. Well, I have one online. Does that count?
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Not a hard copy?
Not a hard copy. Oh. No, I have an online copy.
That counts, I guess.
Does that make me special?
Yeah.
Special needs. That's me. All right, so thank you very much. One more from Jeff here. Pats 27-13. Dobson and Boyce, big TDs.
Okay.
So he's got Boyce in there, and he's got Dobson catching one. Listen, if that happens,
hey, great.
Frankly, then
great.
This team has a great chance to cover it.
Yep.
I just don't think that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think we're still maybe a week or two away from potentially seeing that kind of thing happen.
Okay.
That's the
yeah, big, I'll be pleasantly surprised if
that's
that
the big issue, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's before we wrap up the hour here, here's Cavern in West Palm Beach, Florida. Cav, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John. Hey, Eric. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, Cav. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I have a quick question and then a prediction. I think I had tried to send this in but didn't get an answer over the weekend. But if how long do you think that we should be patient with the development of the rookie wide receivers? And to kind of piggyback on that question, if we were willing to give up draft compensation to the Steelers to get Emmanuel Sanders, for instance, why shouldn't we do that now? I just don't know how much longer we can go with the offense looking the way that it's looked the past 2 weeks.
It's a good question. It's a very good question, Cam.
Yeah, and we kind of talked about this at the top of the show. I think you've got to – you made the decision to go with the youth movement. You got to stick with it. It'd be too much of a panic move to, after 2 weeks or 3 weeks, say, all right, it's a failure. Forget it. They're not going to get it. It's over. I don't think you can do that. You've got to – this is who they decided they wanted in the offseason. They didn't go after any big – names other than Amendola at wide receiver. They maybe tried a little bit with Sanders and didn't match the offer with Pittsburgh. They didn't go after anybody else at that position. They decided they wanted to go young. Hey, you got to sleep in the bed that you made, and this is what they wanted. They better stick with it.
Let me ask you this, and I mean, would you be against us going out and getting somebody? I mentioned Sanders, so we'll just keep talking about Sanders. I mean, to my understanding, he'll be a free agent again this offseason. And
right.
If the Steelers don't sign him, I mean, would you be against going out and still bringing someone in, or you think we still need to just stick it out with the young guys and continue to hope that they develop?
You mean to get Sanders now or in the offseason?
No, like in the offseason.
Oh, in the offseason, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, so you're going to have a whole year to work with.
Right. You do that every offseason.
Sure. Every roster turns over.
Yeah.
So,
I'm talking about short term. I'm talking about for this season. You've decided you're going to have these young guys.
These guys are your guys.
This is it.
The only way, honestly, I would see something like that happen, Cav, would be if an injury situation happened to one of the young guys.
Yeah.
Then maybe you have to
if
do something
like that.
There's
a real disaster.
And we did even discuss that a little bit earlier this week, thinking that, all right, well, you know, bringing somebody in like Terrell Owens, which is a certainly extreme situation. Yeah. And I don't think anybody really wishes that to happen here. But I'm just saying that's the only way you'd see anybody really brought in to be given any serious consideration is if another injury occurs. So, you know, I agree. I think they're going to ride with what they have. You know, we might know by, you know, and I think certainly by, you know, week 8, week 9, which is, you know, the halfway point of the season, you're going to kind of know what you have. Mm. And if this team is still struggling offensively by that time, then, you know, I don't, you know, all bets are off the table. Let's just put it that way. But I think they've already made the decision to go with these guys. These are their guys. Now let's see what they can do. And frankly, I think that's the proper way to go. It's hard for me to argue that point unless, of course, you're going to start from scratch, which, you know, at the end of the season you would be. And if you want to go out and make that move for a guy like Sanders, by all means.
In the offseason.
They should.
Different story.
They should. Hell, I was an advocate for them, you know, going out and trying to bring in Anquan Boldin and not even a sniff. Now I realize that was probably a Brothers Harbaugh deal, but at the same time, you know, still, can't you at least inquire?
Mm. Yeah, I doubt seriously that the Ravens would have made the trade, but I completely agree. I think I was in the group who felt like we should have tried to sign him when he was a free agent coming out of Arizona, even whenever I believe he was traded to Baltimore, maybe.
Absolutely,
I thought we should have been. You know, trying to get him then.
I totally agree with you. I've been a huge Boldin fan from day one. I have been dissuaded not one iota from the fact that the guy can still play because he can. And that was a missed opportunity. But it's water under the bridge now. All right, what do you think about the game then?
Prediction for this week?
Yeah.
Goodness. I'm going to say 24-14 pass.
24-14.
I'm going to be optimistic and hope that the 10 days off has given Brady and the young guys an opportunity to work together. And as much as I would feel better with Gronk playing, I do think that it's wise long term to let him sit another week and let's try to figure it out with these guys. And I hope that we find a way to get Boyce involved because I think he's another guy. I mean, we can really use his speed on the outside. You just never know what you might get.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Thanks for the phone call, Cameron.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. All right. Let's squeeze in Bill in Connecticut real quick. Bill, you're in the playbook. What do you think?
Hey, John. How's it going?
Good.
I think all the rest of my fellow Patriots fans should calm down. I think this is a time to be excited. Number one, even though they're missing on a lot of shots, I'm seeing Brady and these young receivers take more shots down the field than I have in a long time.
Okay. That's true.
Number two is, at some point, they're going to start clicking. I mean, last week's game on a short week, they clearly didn't have a lot of practice time to go over and correct some of the issues that they had in week one. I feel like week one was, you know, a first game jitters with Tim Brown, and then week two was Dobson's first game. I believe I'm going to echo the last caller and say that this 10 days off, they should see significant improvement in these young receivers. Also, by week 8-9, you're going to have probably a full complement with Gronk and a healthy Amendola. So I think this is an exciting time. If we're 2-0, I mean, we should really be excited because we could quite possibly be 0-2 in trying to get better.
That's kind of what we were talking about all week. You know, this team is 2-0. Let's remember the bottom line. They could easily be 0-2.
Yeah, they could easily be 0-2. So I'm excited because I think we're going to see some exciting football with these young players that can stretch the field.
All right, so what do you think about Sunday then?
I think Sunday that our defense is going to force Josh into a couple of turnovers, whether it be by a fumble or a pick. The defense, I think, is going to score, and I give us 24-17.
24-17 it is.
Patriots.
All right, very good. Bill, thanks,
have
man.
A good one, Jeff.
Yep, you too. So 24-17. Seems to be a consensus score of 24-17 somewhere in that vicinity by a lot of the fans. And again, keep the cards and letters coming, kids. We, webradio@patriots.com, the email. You can keep sending a Twitter @JRBroadcaster, Facebook, John.Rook on the Facebook page as well, as we'll continue to take your score predictions in hour number two. But before we let Eric go, there is business to take care of, as always.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
And for the lovely Robin, this is a brand new one. I guarantee it.
Okay.
I guarantee it. It's a brand new one. Because it's a word I only learned myself in the last month or so.
Really?
Yes.
You mean you don't know the entire English vocabulary?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
And I'm trying to help others get there as well.
Okay. See, we're trying to elevate here. Raise the roof here inside the playbook.
That's right. No more putting people down. It's lifting people up.
Right.
That's what we're doing.
That's right.
So today's word is Newman. And not spelled N-E-W-M-A-N.
Hey,
not like the Caddyshack.
Hey.
Not like Seinfeld.
Hey. Hello, Newman.
Hello, right. Newman.
No, this is same pronunciation, but it's N-U-M-E-N. Newman.
Newman.
Or Newman.
Okay.
Know, but that's same pronunciation. But a Newman
Can I have a definition, please?
Yes. A spirit or deity that is believed to inhabit a thing, a place, or a meteorological event. So in other words, the ancients believed in the god of thunder,
mm-hmm.
right? The god of thunder would be an example of a Newman.
Newman.
Right.
Okay.
And things that are related to that are numinous.
Okay.
But that's spelled N-U-M-I-N.
Well, then we actually might have a numinous event Sunday here at Gillette Stadium. It's expected to rain.
If you believe in gods.
If you believe in rains being
inhabiting
caused by gods.
You're right.
It could
yes.
still be considered a numinous event.
It could be, if you were into the ancient.
Work with me here. I'm
beliefs.
Trying to work
sure.
your word into a conversation.
Right. Maybe I would say, you know, the spirits that inhabit Gillette Stadium might help the Patriots win. You know, kind of like when the old Boston Garden people thought was.
That's true.
That was numinous.
That was very numinous, yes. Okay. Well, if we drop the ball a couple of times early, yeah, we'll need some of those Newman to come out.
So how's that for you?
I like it.
And I love the fact that Robin listens.
Yes,
and
she does.
And takes note here because
she takes note.
Now that I have
she's a teacher and she's
right.
you know.
So now
you know.
I feel like I have a I feel like I have a nemesis on the other side here, and I need to stump her with words every day. So you need to come and
you're
report back to me.
Stepping up your game. Yeah,
I'll
ask her about Newman
right.
if she knew that one as well. You know, she might start bowing down to you
right.
on this one. She's like, okay, okay.
No, I don't need that. I don't need that. That's okay.
It's all right. You're teaching the teacher. There you go. All right, Big E, we'll see you here on Sunday.
Yeah, we will.
All right.
1 o'clock.
There you go.
I'm very,
looking forward to the 1 o'clock aspect of that
yes,
game.
Yes, I am too.
I'm so tired of night games.
As well as I.
We're old.
Yes, you know. Well. Speak for yourself.
I'll see you, buddy.
All right, man. All right, Eric Scalavino, PFW. Let's get the timeout in here. Keep your predictions coming, folks, as I'll get to those coming up shortly. But also coming up shortly, the one and only guru, Russell S. Baxter, in the playbook.
You know that celebration dance? The I just got a heck of a deal on awesome entertainment, so let's dance, dance? You probably haven't done it in a while, so here's a reason to. Now until September 3rd, when you sign up for 100% fiber optic Verizon Fios, you can take your entertainment to the next level with America's fastest, most reliable internet. Switch to a Fios triple play online for just $79.99 a month for 12 months and get your choice of a $300 Amazon.com gift card or a $300 Visa prepaid card with a 2-year agreement. Plus, get a high-speed wireless router at no additional charge. You won't get that with cable. And that's an entertainment deal worth dancing about. So hurry. This great summer deal ends September 3rd. Visit gottogetfios.com and upgrade today. Technology that makes life more entertaining. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank, member FDIC. Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Restrictions apply. Fios available in select areas. Offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a 2-year agreement and ends 9/3/13. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply. Visit Verizon.com/Amazon for details.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only 4-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
Hour number two, Playbook for a Thursday, Prediction Thursday, so keep them coming. Web radio at patriots.com, at JR Broadcaster, and of course John.Rook on Facebook. But now we're going to take some time to look around the NFL and bring in our own guru, Russell Baxter from ProFootballGuru.com, Bleacher Report, Yahoo Sports. Russell, good afternoon. How are things today?
Things are terrific. Now, I've been a little busy for the last hour or so. Tom Brady didn't get traded, did he?
Not to my knowledge.
Oh, I was just checking because I was busy yesterday for about an hour, and I noticed that the Cleveland Browns traded Trent Richardson.
Yeah, you know, we haven't had much of a chance to talk about that, but in all honesty, that was that one left me scratching my head a little bit when I heard about it yesterday.
Yeah, obviously, here is a team. And here's what people forget about the Browns, John. The Browns traded up to get Trent Richardson.
Yeah.
In 2012. They had the fourth pick in the draft that year. Minnesota had the third. They wanted to make sure they got their guy, so they flip-flop picks with the Vikings. And now all of a sudden, a running back who everybody thought was going to be a team's workhorse for a number of years is now with the Indianapolis Colts. I brought it up the way I did because it is a head scratcher.
Right. Well, the other thing I can't understand is that, you know, how they would conceivably change direction like this out of the blue when, you know, they're basically, their entire marketing campaign is around Richardson. I heard they're even trying to recall some of their pocket schedules because his picture was on the flip side. What in the heck are these guys thinking?
I don't know. And remember, this is a franchise. You know, we talk about continuity and consistency and so on. This is a franchise that's been back in the league since 1999 and is on its third owner. Now, I bring that up because in their own division lies the Pittsburgh Steelers. Since 1969, they've had three head coaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you don't think continuity is important from top to bottom,
yeah.
I think the Browns are indicative of that. Since they've been back in the league, they've had two winning seasons, one playoff appearance. That hasn't come since 2002. They had a winning season, 10-6 in 2007. And since then, they've lost at least, I think, 11 games 5 years in a row and off to an 0-2 start this year.
Well, clearly they're looking to retool. They'll have a couple of first-round draft picks next year. Maybe they go get themselves Johnny Football.
And then trade him in 2 years.
Because I heard this sentiment earlier today, Russell. I feel badly for Cleveland Browns fans because you just can only take so many kicks to the groin, and I kind of feel like that's what they're getting here again.
Well, it looks like it's, I mean, again, off to an 0-2 start. They've scored 16 points in two games. They've given up 11 sacks in two games, so... Not exactly the offensive balance you're looking for. I think people were excited this year with North Turner coming in as the offensive coordinator. Ray Horton is the defense coordinator, another new head coach, but another new start. And you know, who knows what their season's at. You know, last time prospects for Cleveland looked this low, Cleveland wound up with LeBron James.
Well, right now, they could put pads on the guy. They could line him up at defensive end and let him go. He could probably get something done.
Yes, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
No. Well, speaking of the Browns, as long as you brought him up, you know, they're going to play at Minnesota, and both teams are off to an 0-2 start. But at the same time, I mean, you know, I don't even know how you can figure that, you know, Cleveland's going to have an opportunity here. This could be one long, miserable season, you know, on the lake again.
Yeah, it could be. And, you know, I look at the Vikings and their 0-2 looks dramatically different, than the 0-2 for the Browns. And obviously 0-2 is 0-2. But the Vikings obviously been competitive, lost a pair of road divisional games. Probably, you know, couldn't hang on against the Bears last week. That would really take the sting out of losing at Detroit the week before. But, their defense, and this is a team that didn't have a great defense last year, but they know how to get after the quarterback. They know how to make plays, and we're not seeing that so far this week, this year. 34 points they gave up to the Lions, 31 points to the Bears. Christian Ponder still having some turnover issues, but more so as much as anything else, they let the Bears come down the field late in the game last week. And that one's going to sting a little bit. So they just got to get the ship righted. This was a playoff team a year ago. I think people almost forget that some ways because Adrian Peterson's 2,097 yards was so impressive and overshadowing. You almost forget that Minnesota was in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, no fooling. All right, so let's roll it around the league a bit. We'll start in the division with the Patriots, and both of the two teams they have conquered face off against each other this week. The Bills playing at the Jets, the later Sunday afternoon game. I think it's a 4:25 kickoff. Both teams obviously 1-1 with Doug Marrone getting his first victory as a head coach in the NFL last week. The Jets coming very, very close to popping the Patriots last week, as we know. So do we know anything more about these two teams, though, after 2 weeks than we knew, say, 2 weeks ago at this time?
Yeah, I think we do, at least in the case of the Bills, we do. And, you know, if you're a Bills fan, and you don't get to say that this that often because we have seen them draft very high over the last decade or so. And remember, they haven't been to the playoffs since 1999. But we've seen them draft high, and within 3 or 4 years, all of a sudden, their high draft choice is either traded or chooses to sign elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But in two games, you have seen significant contributions, John, from their top three draft choices so far. E.J. Manuel, the quarterback, obviously, you know, big drive last week to beat the Panthers. Very respectable performance against the Patriots. Robert Woods, the wide receiver, the second-round pick from USC, has been a big plus for them as far as the passing game. And at least my early candidate for Defensive Rookie of the Year is Kiko Alonso, the middle linebacker from Oregon, who has made big plays. I mean, I know you saw what he did against the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fumble recovery down near the goal line, forced a fumble that was returned for a touchdown. Last week had an interception and 10 tackles. So the future looks bright. Now, and then the Jets also had some young picks or first-round picks from a year ago, or I'm sorry, this April, that should develop into good players as well. But I think edge Buffalo so far, and, you know, going to be a close. Here's when you know it's going to be a close game. I don't think there's any question about it. The Bills have played a two-point game and a one-point game. The Jets have played a one-point game and a three-point game. Now, I can't imagine this being a blowout, but I can't imagine the Bills going into MetLife Stadium and pulling one out here.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I thought that the Jets defensively played pretty solidly last week, probably played well enough to win the game. But you know, the Patriots' defense was equal to the task and putting the kind of pressure they needed to on Geno Smith to, you know, pick him off and to also, sack him. And so that really was the difference in last week's game. The other division opponent, the Miami Dolphins, one of the eight teams after 2 weeks to be 2-0, and they are home against next week's Patriot opponent, the Atlanta Falcons. I think this would be one that Pats fans, if you wanted to choose another game to watch, this would be one you'd want to see.
I think this is the most intriguing game of the weekend of the entire slate, because here comes Miami, and they're 2-0, and two road wins, one last week against the Indianapolis Colts, against what has been, even though they haven't gotten to the Super Bowl, but they've had the best record in the NFC two of the last 3 years, five straight winning seasons. I don't think people realize this, John. Over the last 5 years, you know, since 2008, the only team to win more games in the league than the Atlanta Falcons are the New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been, you know, this is an acid test for Miami, and it'll be interesting to see how they respond. They've made their share of plays. They've had a very good pass rush. Their pass protection has been shaky. They've had 9 sacks. They've given up 9 sacks. Unfortunately for Atlanta, I don't know if Atlanta has the people to take advantage of that. Pass rush was a problem for them last year. Pass rush has been a problem for them so far this year. Atlanta comes in here without Steven Jackson now, who was their big offseason pickup. As far as the running game,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think I'm leaning Miami here. I think the momentum of what they did against Indianapolis it should carry over here. And it would be interesting to see Matt Ryan and all that firepower Atlanta has. I'm going to keep an eye on Brent Grimes. Remember the former Pro Bowl corner with the Falcons who was hurt last year, wound up signing with Miami, picked off Andrew Luck in the end zone last week to help preserve that win. And I'm going to just take a nod to say he has a big play in this game.
Yeah, you know, he seemed to be the kind of guy that, you know, might, you know, react toward the challenge, if you will, going up against, you know, his old teammates. And I have to agree with you. I kind of like Miami in this one just based on things, although I will definitely be watching to see, you know, what Atlanta puts out there considering their injury situation and who we think might be available to play at least at this stage of the game next week against the Patriots when they go on the road and obviously face a very, very, a tough Atlanta team. So that's a big game, huge game to watch. A lot of other, you know, interesting games this week as there obviously are every week. I want to start though with tonight's game, the Thursday night game having Kansas City at Philadelphia. So the Chiefs again, one of those surprises. I mean, 2-0. Who thought that, right? And at the same time, the Eagles, I'm a little surprised at 1-1, the way that they started out with week one and, you know, offensively, and then kind of stubbing their toe last week. So do we get a clearer picture now with the Eagles at home? Do we get a clearer picture of what kind of team Chip Kelly might actually have?
Oh, I think it's a very entertaining team. You know, if the first 2 weeks are any indication, every Eagle game is going to include at least 60 points scored
yeah.
by both teams.
Seems like it, right?
60 yeah. in the first game, 63 in the second game.
Right.
Keep in mind that the Eagles last week had 511 yards of total offense, okay? They had well over 300 yards. I think it was 333 of the 511 on 9 plays, John. Mm. And yet gave up 539 yards, and their defense was on the field for 79 plays. You know, remember we talked about that first half with the Eagles with the 53 plays and the 322 total yards?
Yeah, right.
They haven't been on the field as much offensively, although in their defense, which, of course, the Eagles don't have one, they worked up yards so quickly against the Chargers last week, there was no semblance of trying to kill the clock. So anytime San Diego was on the field, they were able to move the ball. And the Chargers even had a pair of turnovers last week and still won. I mean, we always talk about teams, you know, this theory I think is so overblown. A West Coast team coming to the East Coast and playing an early game. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2-for-2. I saw Carolina go. I would see Seattle come to Carolina last week and win. And then this past week, we saw San Diego, who came off a short week, and went into Philadelphia at 1 o'clock and won a game and had 539 yards of total offense. So I think what we're going to see tonight are some cheers for Andy Reid, and then we're going to see some boos for Andy Reid when his Chiefs take the lead for good.
Yeah. So you think the Chiefs pull one on the road then?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they do. No turnovers so far. Defense, I'll give you a guy to keep an eye on. You want to talk about a guy who has made dramatic improvement in 1 year? Dontari Poe,
yeah.
The nose tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more than just the 3.5 sacks he has in 2 games. If you saw the Cowboys game last week, I think he was in the backfield more than DeMarco Murray.
Right. Yeah, right. Very true. Very true. He was a disruptive factor. There's no question.
And once against Jacksonville is one. As well, this was somebody last year. Remember, the Chiefs took him in the first round, weren't sure what they had. They knew he was a little raw. Some people felt he had a very disappointing season. That front three for the Chiefs, it's been kind of disappointing the last few years. Glenn Dorsey's no longer there. He went on to San Francisco. Tyson Jackson has been iffy. He was the third pick in the draft a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Poe looked like maybe another disappointment on defensive line, but not the first 2 weeks so far.
Okay, fair enough. The where do we go here? Hold on a second. I lost my feed. 2 seconds. There it is. Now it's back. Thank you. there's one game this week that I wanted to make sure that we got in, so I was a little bit distracted here, only because you've got one of the teams that's perceived to be a Super Bowl contender against one of the teams that's thought to be a talented team, had a lot of scrutiny during the preseason, the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, with the whole, HBO crew that was with them all, every step of the way. Packers playing at the Bengals this week. Now, it may or may not have a whole lot of bearing on our fans, although Cincinnati is going to be on the schedule coming up. But at the same time, are these two teams, they're both 1-1 coming in, are these two teams legitimate? Do these two teams have flaws that they can kind of overcome? Can they work out of them? Should these two teams be two of the teams left standing toward the end of the year?
I think they will be two teams standing toward the end of the year. Cincinnati was actually my Super Bowl pick.
Yep.
Back in August, I had Cincinnati over Seattle in the Super Bowl this year. And, so far, the seeds are there for the Bengals. A lot of young talent. You saw their top two draft picks against Pittsburgh make big plays. Tyler Eifert, that big reception down the middle of the field. And then a preseason pick for offensive rookie year, Giovanni Bernard,
yeah,
who had a rushing touchdown, a receiving touchdown. I think the sky's the limit for him, and he gives the Bengals a big play presence out of the backfield that they have not had in a while. We know they've had the wide receivers. They have A.J. Green now. For years it was Chad Johnson and T.J. Houshmandzadeh when Carson Palmer was there.
but now they have a home run threat out of the backfield. And there's a lot to be said for that defense. You know, last year the 51 sacks, top 10 in terms of yards allowed, let one get away from them a little bit, although turnovers were a factor against Chicago. But, you know, I know the Steelers' offense has been struggling, but Cincinnati still got the job done. As for the Packers, you know, once they get, you know, the running game untracked, which they did a little last week with James Starks against Washington. I, you know, everybody's moving the ball on Washington, talking about a team with defensive problems. And Aaron Rodgers just speaks for himself. I mean, 480 yards and four touchdowns last week against the Redskins. How's this for a number? This number just gets better every time you look at it. Since the beginning of 2011, John, Aaron Rodgers has thrown 91 touchdown passes and 15 picks.
Pretty good ratio.
And in the 33 games he's played, he's thrown at least three touchdown passes 20 times.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, those are Brady-like numbers in terms of volume and so on. Now, again, this is also a team that you know, needs to tighten up its defense. Man, they were horrible against the run down the stretch last year. You know, the last week against Washington, it's hard to judge because how that game was, you know, but they gave up all those passing yards to the Colin Kaepernick and a little rushing last week. So I think defenses around the league, for the most part, maybe with the exception of the Seattle Seahawks, seem like they're off to a little bit of a slow start this year.
And you have Cincinnati winning it all? I don't think I knew that from you.
Yes, I know. It was something that I wanted to surprise you with because I wasn't sure when your birthday was. But yeah, I had Cincinnati winning it all. You know, two franchises that haven't won so far. But I like the fact that they've been building and building. I like the fact that of the division Cincinnati is in. It's a division that has sent two teams to the playoffs 5 years in a row and three teams to the Super Bowl in 5 years with Baltimore and Pittsburgh. And again, if Cincinnati makes the playoffs this year, I don't think people realize that the franchise has never been to the postseason 3 years in a row. Mm-hmm. I think they have a great chance to do it this year. Now, of course, they got to get more consistency from Andy Dalton. I mean, he completed 25 of 45 passes the other night against Pittsburgh, which you can do the math real quick. If he had 25 completions, that means he had 20 incompletions.
Mm-hmm.
So ball sailing on him. You know, missed some obvious throws the other night. This is a guy who's played two playoff games. He's yet to throw a touchdown pass. They get him settled down and in a groove, and he certainly got the weapons, which is why I think they went with the underneath weapons with Eifert and Bernard instead of just him and A.J. Green being a one-man show. I think this is a very, very dangerous team.
All right. The Arizona Cardinals playing at the New Orleans Saints. Nice little matchup here in the NFC. Obviously, the Saints also in the Patriots' near future. Looks like Sean Payton's kind of gotten his team, you know, back on their winning ways. But I noticed one thing that really stood out when I was looking at this game earlier. The Saints aren't scoring quite what they have been in the past. In fact, I think they're dead last in red zone offense. And considering where the Patriots are, you know, offensively, it must be something to say that there's somebody worse off than you are.
Yeah, but the beauty for the Saints so far is the fact that in two games, they've given up a combined 31 points in their 2-0 start. Now, to put that in perspective, last year, the Saints gave up 454 points. They gave up 31 or more points in seven games. So to give up 31 in two games, obviously, is a big step in the right direction. Last week, the yards they gave up against the Bucs would have been a season best against last year's defense, which we know, of course, gave up the most yards in league history in one season.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the pluses. It's funny because offensively, you know, they're not wowing you with the running game. And, you know, so far it's almost like it's been Breeze and Graham and Sproles. Colston obviously still a factor there, but maybe still looking for another wide receiver. You know, in past years, they've always been very, very deep there. But this is kind of different kind of Saints team. And I know Sean Payton knows he has to rectify his game plan to protect that defense. I think the defense is better with Rob Ryan. But it still missing a lot of pieces as it adjusts to the 3-4. But, you know, give credit where credit's due. You know, that they got off to a rough start against Atlanta. They were down 10-0 in the first quarter, came back and won that game. I know it was at home, and I know they own the Falcons, but that was a big step. Hey, look where they were a year ago at this time. 0-2 on their way and 0-4. Now they're 2-0.
Yeah, they are 2-0, and a future opponent. One more game that I wanted to touch on before we get to the Pats here, Russell. It's unusual to say this, but, I mean, the Steelers are 0-2. They are home, and they're taking on 2-0 Chicago. I got a chance to watch the Steelers the other night, like I'm sure a lot of people did, and they don't have the same snap, crackle, pop. It doesn't look like it's the same. I don't know if it's Roethlisberger. I don't know if it's that they don't have a running game to speak of, because I know it's been like forever since they've had a back go over 100 yards. But I'm getting the feeling that, you know, things might have to get a little worse in Pittsburgh before they get better. Is that true?
I don't disagree with you at all. The snap, crackle, and pop, they've kind of been soggy in milk.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're absolutely right. I know Todd Haley's under fire again, the offensive coordinator. They were counting so much on Le'Veon Bell, the rookie from Michigan State, the second-round pick, and he's out. The offensive line has been a mess. No Pouncey again. I think defensively they're still fine. Although once another game were no takeaways.
Yeah.
And eventually that wore on them Monday night. And I rehash his stat because it's easy to figure out. 35 takeaways in the last 34 games for the Pittsburgh Steelers, which is an amazing total considering they had 35 alone in the 2010 season. Mm. So they're stopping people to a degree. They only gave up 407 yards on Monday night. They only gave up 20 points. Gave up one touchdown to Tennessee. But when your offense puts 19 points on the board, I shouldn't even say offense. Remember how the season started for the Steelers?
Yeah.
Tennessee gets a safety on the opening kickoff.
Yeah.
And it's been downhill for Pittsburgh ever since. And now they get a Bears team that I think is feeling itself and feeling good about itself after come from behind wins over Cincinnati and Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Jay Cutler sacked one time in two games. I don't know if the Steelers get to him. I will say this. I think this is desperation for the Steelers. They're playing at home, and I get the feeling defense is going to take matters into their own hands. Somehow I think Pittsburgh wins an ugly game, but I certainly think Chicago's the better football team.
You know, funny thing about it is that I actually thought after watching Pittsburgh that there were some similarities to what Pittsburgh was going through and what the Patriots are going through. The only difference being is that the Patriots' defense is making some plays while Pittsburgh's is not, but both teams are kind of firing blanks on offense.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And as you know, in this league, there's so many other ways to win. You can play a poor offensive game and sometimes get away with it. And I just think there's going to be an air of desperation for the Steelers at home on Sunday night. And I'll say this, if the Steelers slip to 0-3 and their offense doesn't perform, I think there's going to be a long, hard look taken at everything from top to bottom offensively. That is not saying that Mike Tomlin's about to be fired. That's not what I'm saying. But there's been a lot of discussion there over the last year or so with Ben Roethlisberger's relationship with Todd Haley. Again, injuries, personnel not working out. The offensive line is a big culprit here. An 0-3 start for the Steelers, which that hasn't happened since 2000, which would be quite a long time ago if you think about the consistency of this team.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't want to shortchange the Bears here as well. They're still getting their takeaways. And they're getting a lot of timely plays from Jay Cutler, who had his ups and downs against Minnesota. But bottom line is he's got a new toy, and that's Martellus Bennett. And in case you haven't wondered what Mark Trestman has done for Jay Cutler bringing in Martellus Bennett, Bennett already has 3 touchdown receptions in 2 games. That's as many as all the tight ends for the Bears had all of last season.
Right. Well, then that brings us to New England and Tampa Bay. I think we all realize that Tampa's only a couple of plays away from being 2-0 themselves, and yet they are 0-2. The Patriots are a couple of plays probably away from being 0-2, and they're 2-0. We know that the Bucs practiced here, you know, for a week with the Patriots before playing them in the preseason, although I'm not sure, other than just being familiar with some personnel in a general sense, what that really helps or hinders for this matchup. We also know that Bill Belichick is pretty good friends with Greg Schiano, I guess as much as you're going to have friends in this game in the NFL. We know that Bill Belichick loves Greg Schiano-coached players, considering all the Rutgers kids that, you know, the Patriots selected and or signed to free agent deals in the offseason. What we don't know is whether or not the Patriots can, you know, score with any regularity like they are used to scoring over the last few years because of the struggles on offense, the inexperience on offense. But the defense seems to be kind of holding things together, which we've sort of said, you know, well, that's a good thing because it's been the offense carrying the defense the last few years. Maybe the defense needs to carry the offense a little bit further. Biggest question here is how much further can they go before the offense must contribute?
Well, I think the offense will down the road will contribute. I don't think there's any question about it. It's a work in progress. You know, I was saying somebody today, Kembrell Tompkins.
Yep.
There's only one thing he has in common with Wes Welker. They were both not drafted.
Yeah.
Okay? But here's the thing that people lose, and I, you know, you heard this all off season. Well, it doesn't matter who, you know, who the Patriots bring in for wide receiver, Tom Brady's going to turn them into Pro Bowlers. I mean, we can't be that naive. You can't easily replace the 672 catches Wes Welker had in 6 years. It takes time to develop him. And here's what gets lost about Wes Welker. Wes Welker was an established NFL player before he came to the Patriots. He had a stint with the Chargers. He obviously had a stint with the Miami Dolphins before the Patriots went out and got him. Kembrell Tompkins, and I'm not picking on him, I'm just using him as one example. He's a rookie free agent who is learning how to play professional football, as is Aaron Dobson. So the fact that the Patriots, having as many offensive problems as they're having, still have won a pair of divisional games, one of them on the road, there's a lot to be said for them. And I'm sure the New England Patriots, I mean the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, would love to trade places with the New England Patriots right now, even with those offensive woes, because no one can seem to get a grasp, John, on what exactly is going on in Tampa Bay. We know it seems that their quarterback and the head coach are at odds. It seems that maybe there is some player disharmony with the head coach. Rumors of the quarterback, and rumors, of course, not being voted captain. And I know you've heard those stories as well. I mean, the voter count and so on. It's listen, I know they have a big Jolly Roger there, but I didn't expect to have mutiny on the Bounty down in Tampa. That's what it sounds like, Brown. It sounds mutinous.
Well, is
in
this
Tampa Bay?
Is this toward Schiano? And do you think you could see the players siding with like Josh Freeman in this particular instance?
I don't know who's siding with so on, but I know that the issues with the Buccaneers off the field seem to be taking as much of the headlines as on the field. And, you know, when you find a way to lose a game like they did against the Jets, when, you know, when your leading tackler from a year ago shoves the quarterback out of bounds and says it's a field goal, and you allow the Saints to you know, cover a short field last week. Listen, I could make a joke here and say it's really easy that the Patriots win this game by three, okay, because the Bucs lost a one-point game in week one and a two-point game in week two.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have to like them to lose a three-point game in week three and so on and so on.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, we can just use simple logic like that.
Sure.
But here's the difference between an 0-2 team in New England, in Tampa Bay, and you could say they're both struggling. But the Buccaneers have found a way to lose two games, and the Patriots have found a way to win two games.
This is true. This is true. That's the difference. That's the difference between these two teams.
Right.
The Patriots are finding a way to win. The Bucs have found a way to lose.
John, we have seen in the first 2 weeks of the season, 22 of the 32 games decided by 7 points or less. We've seen 4 1-point games in 2 weeks. There were 11 of them all of last year. Okay, the ability to make a play or not make a mistake—that's how close these teams are.
and even the perennial powerhouses, you know, have their days where they're not up to snuff. You know, I think too much is made about the Patriots of how they win instead of they're just winning. I checked the BCS standings. The New England Patriots are not on there.
Maybe they should be.
The other 31 teams. But yeah. We get, you know, we've had this age of, you know, power rankings and, you know, gauging the teams 1 through 32. The beauty of the NFL is we get to settle this on the field.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't matter what somebody's ranked. It doesn't matter what the point differential is. Last time I checked, you could win every game by 1 point and go undefeated.
That's true. And that's what we've been trying to preach to fans here all week. It's still 2-0.
Well, isn't it funny the era of the Patriots these days where they've scored their 500 or more points 3 years in a row and 4 times in 6 years? Why does when the Patriots won their 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, all of them were by 3 points?
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody care that they didn't blow anybody out in the Super Bowl?
Of course
no.
not. Of course
exactly.
not.
And I think we get too caught up in, you know.
Style points.
You know, we were, after Sunday night, Seattle was somewhat declared the best team in the league because they beat the 49ers by 26.
Sure.
Not that they beat the 49ers, but that they beat the 49ers by 26.
Correct.
And it just doesn't work that way in the league. I'll give you a perfect example, and as usual, I'm babbling. But Houston plays Baltimore this week.
Mm-hmm.
But Houston's never won in Baltimore, but that's not the point. remember the midseason last year? Baltimore went into Houston and lost by 30,
right.
43-13.
Right.
2.5 months later, who won the Super Bowl?
You're talking about last year?
Yeah, Baltimore.
It was Baltimore that won the Super Bowl, yes.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, that's very true. You just don't know at this stage of the game. That's very true.
We see this more and more every year. I mean, actually, the evidence mounts that we've seen 3 Super Bowl champions in a row win 10 games, 9 games, and 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, New England finds a way to win. Tampa Bay finds a way to lose. I don't know if it's going to be that way this week, but I do like the Patriots to win. I don't know if it's going to be another instance in which Tampa Bay makes a critical mistake late in the game. But something seems to be off with the Buccaneers. And for the Patriots, I think things are off, but I think they're a lot more fixable than they are in Tampa right now.
I think that's fair enough. Right now, it's still a team that's developing, and I think that's one of the things that, again, the Patriots are preaching and we've been talking about is the fact that you're going to have to be patient with this New England team because it's not the typical New England team, and that's probably as good of advice as anybody can get right now. Russell?
But I will say this,
yeah?
And I love throwing out this stat as I...
Yay. I love numbers.
The Patriots are 2-0.
Yeah.
One of 8 teams.
Correct.
I'd say that one of those 8 teams will be in the Super Bowl in February.
Yeah, I saw that. In one of your little tweets this week. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
With the exception of the 1987 season, which was interrupted by 3 replacement games, and that was the year Denver went 1-0-1, and the Redskins 1-1. So 46 times in 47 years,
the Super Bowl has
included at least one team to open the season 2-0. I can't explain that. It's just a fact. Will it hold up again this year? I don't know. It would be kind of fun when we do this next year to make it 47 out of 48.
Absolutely. That's something good to hold on to. As always, my man, thank you very, very much for the time. It's always appreciated.
You got it. We'll talk next week.
Talk to you next week. Yes, sir.
We'll see what happens with the Bucks. If they lose by 3, I know where I'm putting my money to lose by 4 next week.
Patriots by 4 next week. Okay. But that'll be a little tougher road to hoe, I think, in Atlanta. And we'll have that conversation
next
week.
What about the Bucks? If the Bucks lose by three. The first 3 games, 1, 2, 3.
Then they'll lose by 4 next week.
Yeah. And then I'm going to start to get a little nervous.
Yeah, then you might. Then you might have to, switch your job, you know, site out to, someplace like Vegas or something. You never know.
Well, what it will also tell me is I will put in a future bet for when the Bucks play in the season finale and they lose by 16.
Yeah. Think of the odds on that one, right? Woo! All right, Russell. Great to talk to you. Talk to you next week.
You got it, John.
Russell Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com. And you can, by the way, follow him on Twitter if you're not already, @BaxFootballGuru. It's BAX. Football Guru. That's how you can follow him. All right, he's been waiting patiently, I'm sure, to give us his prediction for Sunday. Eldridge in North Carolina. Hey, Eldridge.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Good, buddy. What's happening?
I'm thinking 21-18.
21-18. All right. So in other words, you're going to take the points on this one, but the Patriots find a way to win it.
Right. That's what I'm going to take.
Okay.
I'm going to be hoping anyway. And that Kansas City game.
Yeah.
In Philly. There's going to be a lot of mixed emotion with that one.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping Andy come out on top, just to show him.
Right.
Just to show him.
Just to show him.
Right. See, now that defense. You know, the offense did look pretty good, but the defense still the same. So Andy should know how to attack that defense because it's the same, you know, even though they got rid of Alphonse and Camardi and all of them, they're still the same. They're still going to have a lot of yards and a lot of points.
Right.
So, but only problem that is, that means Alex Smith has to throw a little bit more than just him with the outs and stuff.
Right.
He got to stretch the field.
Right.
And I don't know if Bo can do that by itself. You know what I mean?
Probably not. Yep, I think that's probably accurate. Absolutely. All right, so you got 21-18 on Sunday, correct?
21-18 on Sunday.
You're in the books, baby. Thanks, Eldridge. I want to take some time now to look a little bit more in-depth into what Tampa Bay may be bringing in here on Sunday. Rick Stroud covers the Buccaneers for the Tampa Times, also hosts a talk show on 620 a.m. in Tampa. He joins us here in the playbook. Rick, John Rook here. Thanks for the time this afternoon.
Good morning. How you doing?
Great, Rick.
Good afternoon, I guess. I've been up since morning.
It could be morning. You never know. Hey, absolutely.
Yeah, it's 4 a.m. Everything's morning, right?
Exactly. And we actually have a lot of listeners overseas in Europe and a couple of callers from Munich, Germany, and to them it is morning. So there you go. All right. Is there controversy brewing in Tampa? I mean, is there a real bit of conflict here between quarterback and head coach? And is this part of the reason why this team has started 0-2?
I think there's a little distrust maybe between Josh Freeman and Greg Schiano. That might stem from the offseason. They didn't extend his contract, number one. And Greg said some things, wanting to bring in competition, not being wedded to him, wouldn't mind if, you know, Mike Glennon, their third round pick, won the job, that sort of thing. But there's a lot of other on the line. I mean, first of all, they haven't won games. I mean, they've lost now 7 out of 8 of their last 8 games under Greg Schiano. He comes from Rutgers. Which was not a high-profile program nationally. They didn't play for national championships. They didn't win Big East championships. So when you're a disciplinarian, when you grind these guys as much as he has physically, and you lose really 2 games that you had won in sort of horrific fashion on last-second field goals in each game, I think there's always going to be, you know, some dissatisfaction and some frustration right now, and I think that's what you're starting to sort of see seep around the edges.
Do you get a sense that the locker room is starting to slide one way or the other, either with Freeman or with Schiano?
Well, I mean, I think it can if they don't start winning football games. I think they see that there's some talent on this football team, and actually, the first 2 games defensively, this team has played very, very well. They've allowed just 16 points a game, really. They lead the National Football League in sacks. They've turned quarterbacks over with interceptions. They return them for touchdowns. They've done pretty much everything, but the passing game has been non-existent. And that starts, of course, with the quarterback who had just 9 completions last week, which is a career low. He's in his 5th season, and there's guys in that locker room that know he can produce. They know his skill set. They've seen him do it, and they're probably wondering why it's not working for him right now and wondering if maybe the offensive scheme or the head coach might have something to do with that. But it's the NFL. Tom Brady had almost the same kind of game against the New York Jets that Josh Freeman had. The difference is Tom Brady has a lot of hardware on his fingers.
Yeah, I guess that's certainly a convenient way to put it. And I don't mean to downgrade your thoughts there, but the fact is that he has been in position to convert losses into wins. And I think you could arguably say that's exactly what Tom Brady has done through the first 2 weeks of this season, whereas Josh Freeman hasn't had that experience. And I'm sure there are those fans and media and otherwise who are wondering if he's capable of doing that in Tampa.
Well, yeah, I mean, you are what you are in this league. And,
right.
You know, I don't have to say it or you don't have to say it. It's the old Parcells thing. If you play long enough, the NFL will tell you what you are. Having said all that, he does have a skill set, and sometimes that doesn't translate into wins, and he is just 25 years old, but he's played a lot of football games. So you're right. He should be producing at a higher level. He's had a number of offensive coordinators, head coaches, and quarterbacks coach, and that all sounds like excuses, but they need to find, they have fundamental flaw, quite frankly, in these first couple weeks. It's not just Josh Freeman. It's that they lead the National Football League in penalties. They've had 23 penalties in two tight ball games that, you know, and they're self-inflicted. They're penalties of omission as much as commission, although we know about Deshaun Golston and the helmet-to-helmet hits. That certainly has hurt them as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they look bad in game management on the sideline. They've had timeouts after, you know, delay of games after timeouts. They've had 10 men on the field in goal line stands. I mean, all these things sort of need to be controlled, and the details is what's really hurting this football team right now, and that's really the coach's responsibility to get that solved.
Sure, and that's, of course, part of the reason why the Patriots are winning is because they're paying attention to some of those little details. Rick Stroud, who covers the Bucs for the Tampa Times, joined us here inside the Patriots playbook. Now, you already talked about how the Bucs are struggling to throw the football, and certainly the numbers would kind of bear that out here over the first couple of weeks. It does seem to put a little bit of stress now on a guy like Doug Martin. So to me, for a Patriot team that has been susceptible in the past, although they've got a decent start to the year in the secondary, it seems to me then New England's defense has to focus on making sure that Doug Martin doesn't get loose.
I think that's the focus of every defense when they play the Bucs, because certainly the easiest thing to do is turn around and hand the ball off to him. He's a game breaker. He led all rookies in yards last year with over 1,400, almost 2,000 yards from scrimmage. So any defense is going to have to start there and try to keep, you know, Josh in predictable down and distances. That said, he ran for 144 yards last week against the Saints defense, which probably isn't as good as the one they're going to see in New England. Certainly Bill Belichick can create a lot of schemes to make it difficult for Doug Martin. But, you have to start with stopping Doug. And I think one big bonus for the Bucs this week that the Patriots will face that the Bucs have not had since they signed him is Carl Nix has a really good chance of playing in this game, the All-Pro from New Orleans that they got last year. And when he played the 7 or 8 games last season, they were a different offensive line. He has never played with Davin Joseph, and that was the plan initially, but Joseph was lost for the year last season with a knee injury. Now they're back, and this could be the first game that these two offensive guards, Pro Bowl guards, could play together, and so that will certainly help their offensive line and their offensive general.
Yeah, that's interesting to note. So something I think to look for then on Sunday. Let's flip it to the other side of the ball, because whereas New England is going to certainly focus on Doug Martin, I would think that Tampa would probably take their chances on putting some pressure on Tom Brady, considering they lead the NFL in sacks, as you've already pointed out, which is going to put a little bit of pressure on the Patriots' offensive line. It may even put more pressure, come to think of it, on some of these young receivers who are having trouble holding on to the football. So, until the Patriots, receivers can show us they can hang on to it, that's going to put an undue amount of stress on the Patriot running game. And I don't know, does LeGarrette Blount get his shot against his former team?
I'm sure he'd love to, and he, you know, he certainly has some skills, but the Bucs were number one against the run last year.
Yep.
They're very good against the run this year. They do a lot of stunting and a lot of things. They led the NFL, I think, in tackles for losses. So in those early downs, look for them to make it very difficult from a blocking assignment standpoint, because they move so many guys around when they have you in sort of those run downs. Now, this is the best offensive line they've played, so you have to give the Patriots a lot of credit. They do a great job of not just run blocking, but also protecting Brady. Having said that, where the Bucs are better is in their linebacking core. Those guys are very active. We're talking about Levante David, who has 2.5 sacks, Mason Fox, who has a sack. Every linebacker has a sack and an interception. That's never happened in the first two games before in the league. And so they're very active. Then on the back end is where the biggest improvement. Tom Brady gets to see his old buddy Darrelle Revis this week, and
yes,
how many battles have they had with the Jets. And the question will be, does Darrelle Revis get to put Julian Edelman or somebody on Revis Island? That's what he really hasn't done yet. He was frustrated last week because down the stretch, Marcus Colston was in the slot. Darrelle Revis was outside, and Colston beat Leonard Johnson down the field and set him up in field goal range. I think you might see a different game plan where somebody goes on Revis Island.
Yeah, I'm beginning to believe that myself, to be honest with you. And, of course, there was a mutual admiration society going on between Brady and Revis. And, obviously, he also talked about yesterday Deshaun Goldson as well, that if he was going to play safety in the NFL, he would want to play the way that Goldson plays.
Right.
You know, the helmet-to-helmet hit, you know, the big fine this week notwithstanding. So you're facing, if you're looking at it from Brady's point of view, you're facing two of the best, maybe, defensive backs in the entire game right now on the other side of the ball. And you're looking at a front seven that was number one in the league against the rush a year ago. How do the Patriots solve the Bucs' defense?
Well, I mean, they got a Hall of Fame quarterback, and it starts there. I mean, and they have all the respect in the world. And I think an advantage, too, it's for both teams, but let's face it. I mean, Tom had a chance to work against these guys for a week. He carved them up pretty good in the preseason game. I know that Lamonte David and others only played a couple plays. Revis didn't play at all. Golston didn't play very much. So, I mean, this is the real thing. It's going to be tough. It's going to be on those young receivers of the New England Patriots to be where they're supposed to be. And we saw Brady's frustration level last week. You'll probably see a little bit about that this week. But I think the biggest improvement the Bucs have made is on defense. You can see that. And I don't think it'll be an easy game for the Patriots or for Tom Brady in particular. He's going to have to be very persistent, but they know how good he is. And believe me, they've got the biggest challenge this week that they've had so far.
All right. Rick, thanks for the time. Safe travels up this way, and sure appreciate the knowledge this afternoon.
Look forward to it. I hope it's nice and cool in New England for me.
You're expecting a little cool and maybe a little rain even on Sunday, so be prepared.
All right, I'll take it.
There you go, babe. Thank you.
Take care.
You got it. Rick Stroud, Tampa Times, joining us here on the Playbook. All right, very, very quickly, because we're at the top of the hour, and we got to move on here for the football guys here. But Melvin in Tennessee, you got a prediction, Melvin, for Sunday?
Yeah, I got a quick one. I'll go 21-20 Pats, and that's still, somewhat of a, I think that the receivers are going to make their improvement with those 10 days off, and I think that they can, I think things will be trending in the right direction. But the one thing that I did pick up in the preseason, I'll just talk about this, and then I'm through with it. But
all right.
I did see that Kimbrell Tompkins, in the Lions game, make a third down drop. But what he did do, and I liked about that game, was he shrugged it off. He moved on to the next series. And then I saw him come out there, get another group, and catch more plays. I don't want to see you up there like how Dustin did. Once I feel like he had that big drop, and Kimbrough, I think they got rattled. I think I saw frustration, not only on Brady's face, but a little bit of their confidence was kind of shook. I could tell with their facial expressions throughout those games. So I want to see if you do make mistakes, which you're going to make mistakes, that's fine. Let's go out there and still play and learn how to put the play behind you and not
right.
Be able to take you the longer for us again. So that's
right.
One thing that I saw, and I think if they could do that, that'd be fine because they're going to be going against, Barron, Revis, Gulf,
right.
And their secondary is pretty good. I mean, it's pretty built. So I just want to see them make those improvements, and I think they will, but I'll let you get to the end of the show. They're running short on time, so I'll talk to you later on.
Good stuff, Melvin. That's a good observation. Appreciate that. And I also like Rick's observation as well. It's about time that somebody out there probably gets themselves on Revis Island. You just hope that it doesn't start this week for a guy like Julian Edelman, who could very well find himself there. All right, let me run through some very quick predictions. Sean in Vancouver says it's not just that the Patriots are 2-0, it's that they're undefeated in their conference and in their division. That's what he says. Tony says 28-10 Pats. Nicholas in Victoria, British Columbia. Pats 20, Bucks 17. Let's see. Mike in Norfolk. He's going to go with Patriots 30, Buccaneers 16. Zach in Medford, Mass. goes 23-17, Patriots. TG and NJ, 17-16, Tampa. He's taking the Bucs to win it. Steve in Killeen, Texas says 28-15, Patriots over the Bucs. I like some of the different scores this week. Dan says Patriots win 24-7. Let's see what else we have. Any more predictions? Jeff in Alberta, 24-17. I think that's the fifth or sixth person we've had pick 24-17 on that one. Let's see. Was there another one? I think that was it. Okay, that's what I got. So good stuff here overall. Let me check Twitter again really, really fast. And no. We're all good. Yep, 27-13 for the Patriots over the Bucks by Jeff via Twitter. All right. Thanks to Rick Stroud from the Tampa Times for joining us. Eric Scalavino, the pro football guru himself, Russell Baxter, for joining us here in the Playbook. Thanks for the predictions. If you get a correct score, I know we'll hear from you next week, but then you'll win a free copy of the Patriots yearbook for next week. So keep them coming. Next week, we'll turn the corner, peekaboo on a three-game stretch that's just going to be monstrous. It starts at Atlanta, but we can't get there before we get through this weekend against Tampa Bay. So same Pat's time, same Pat's channel next week right here, beginning Tuesday, 2 o'clock Eastern time on Patriots Playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.